The Jeremy White Show.
Our next guest is getting set to hit the stage for the Las Vegas residency, the House of Blues in Vegas. A couple of dates kicking off September 29th, running through to mid-October. Tickets are on sale now at houseofblues.com/Las Vegas or Ticketmaster.com. Of course, their brand new cover of an absolute Aerosmith jam is available now. We're going to talk all about that. Welcome to the show for the first time from one of my favorite bands and my mom's favorite band, Tesla, the one and only Frank Hannon. How's it going?
Hey, it's going great, Jeremy. Thanks for having me on your show. And, you know, I'm happy that we're your mom's favorite band. You know, we're crossing the generational boundaries here, pushing 40 years. It'll be that we've been rocking and rolling. And I can't tell you how grateful we are to be still doing it and crossing new frontiers with a residency in Las Vegas. Five shows. This is our second one this year. It's crazy.
Yeah. I have a really funny story to tell you actually about my mom and Tesla and Vegas specifically. My mom and a bunch of her girlfriends back in maybe, this had to be like 2009 or 2010. You guys were playing at the House of Blues in Vegas. My mom and her girlfriends, they all flew out there. They were all going to see Tesla. So excited, so stoked. They went to dinner, went to the hotel, everything. Got to the venue. It's posted on the doors. Performance canceled due to illness.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh. And that was Las Vegas? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah. It had to be like 2012. No, like 2009, 2010, something around that time, okay. Or 2011. But I specifically remember that because I thought it was hilarious because she never goes anywhere for any band. She's like, I love Tesla. I have to go. And then it got canceled.
I hope we've made it up to her by now. And if not, send her to Las Vegas here next week. We're going to be there for 10 days and five shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can honestly count on one hand, really, how many shows that we've ever canceled due to illness.
We did have to
cancel the tour when COVID hit back in 2020, right when we released our Cold Blue Steel video.
Yeah.
But the only time we've ever really rescheduled or canceled a show is when our singer Jeff has been unable to sing, you know, and gosh, you know, that's for a guy at his age and the kind of songs that he sings.
He still sounds fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you, man. We work at it, man. We do work hard at trying to keep it going.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the shows in Vegas are going to be fantastic. And maybe I'll surprise my mom with some passes and a flight next week, you know?
Yeah, get a hold of me, man. Let me know and I'll put her on the list.
Talking about, I mean, his voice specifically, I mean, like, how does he keep it going? I mean, there's so many singers that from, you know, your decade of music that just can't sing anymore. They're blown out. Like, they're, you know, miming to the Pro Tools tracks at this point. But he's still going out there and just sounding incredible. I saw three shows in summer of 2019 when you guys were on tour with Def Leppard. And every night he just sounded incredible. I mean, like, what's the secret to the longevity in those pipes?
Well, it's a combination of a lot of things. You know, it's a team effort. We don't roll any tape or do any fake baloney. We're 100% live. We don't have any backing tracks or any garbage like that. So, you know, some of our shows do sound raw, but consistently people do say the same thing that you're saying, that we sound pretty darn good still after all this amount of time. What we do is we really are selective on the songs that we try to do. I mean, there's definitely some songs in our set list that people ask for. I mean, that aren't in our set list, you know, that people want to hear, that we don't even try to do it because we know it'll blow his voice out.
Right.
You know, there's some songs from 1989 that are just impossible to do at our age. So we stay away from those. We've also, you know, we tune our guitars down a little bit on a couple things. So we've tried different tunings, but it still sounds great. In fact, some of them sound better drop down a little bit.
Yeah.
One song in particular, I relearned it on the guitar in a totally different key. Like normally it plays C. I'm now playing it in G. And so that brings it down to a whole nother level melodically.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we experiment with those things rather than rolling tape and being fake. We want to keep it real. And like I said, we actually enjoy playing these songs in different keys and different ways
Yeah, it brings like a new life to the songs at the same time.
It really does, man. And it keeps it interesting for me as a musician to relearn and re-examine stuff that we did 35 years ago.
Yeah.
And on top of that, JK, he's an enigma, man. Our singer, he's one of these guys that has that young gene, you know, genetically, he's just like a young guy. He's like a little kid still, you know?
Yeah, I know. We were hanging out backstage and like, he was just full of energy. And I'm like, the dude's just awesome.
Yeah, yeah, he is awesome. I love him dearly. And we've been together since, you know, 1983, 84. The first time I ever heard him sing was at a club. He sat in with us and he was standing next to me and he wasn't coming to the microphone because he had the microphone way down here. He didn't know how to even hold the microphone, but I could hear him. I was listening to him standing next to me and I could hear that tone that he had. And he joined the band and then we went to Guam and we played for 3 months straight every night, 6 sets a night, paying our dues on the island of Guam, playing for the Navy people there and the military. And then we would play for locals at the villages. I mean, it was literally like going to boot camp.
Damn.
And we did that. And then we came back and we made a demo tape with Ronnie Montrose.
Mm.
And he coached us. And then we met some other people. We went to LA and one thing led to another. But from the beginning, being a guitar player and having a singer like Jeff Keith, it's just amazing. I can imagine it's like what Joe Perry feels when he listens to Steven Tyler, you know.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, you heard our Aerosmith cover.
Yeah, it's great. I wanted to talk to you about that because I mean, like, you know, you guys have covered Rock Bottom and a bunch of different things, and like, you know, obviously you're a huge Joe Perry fan. Joe and Brad, not the super flashy guys. They don't make the lists of the greatest guitar players, but I mean, they've been around 50 years. You can't deny their influence. What is it about Aerosmith for you that just that's one of your favorite bands?
Well,
even as a guitar player,
it always comes down to the songs. I don't care if it's the Beatles or if it's Beethoven. Dun 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 dun. It's the song. It's a song that matters. And Aerosmith, man, Dream On, Walk This Way, Sweet Emotion, SOS, you know, Nobody's Fault, Back in the Saddle, Last Child. It's the songs that they put together as a group, you know, with Brad Whitford songwriting, Joe Perry, Steven Tyler, Tom Hamilton. They all put their ideas into it, you know, and created songs. And that's what you remember the most about your favorite band is what songs do they play?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that's how I feel anyway.
Guitar perspective wise, I mean, like, what do you think of Joe as a player?
Well, Joe is what you call a feel player. I mean, he plays off the cuff and he'll play stuff that just makes your hair stand up and makes you jump up out of your seat and go, what the hell did he just do there? You know?
Yeah.
So I love Joe's playing, but I also love Brad Whitford's playing, and they complement each other very well because Brad Whitford is a very knowledgeable technician on the guitar, man. He was very precise, and you can tell he's influenced by, you know, the Beatles and the chords that he plays. So they make a great team.
I've always said that Eddie Van Halen is one of the greatest. I mean, you're a huge fan of Michael Schenker. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, like, what do you think about Eddie's playing compared to Schenker? Because there's a lot of comparisons online these days, especially when I talk to Mitch. You know, he'd go back and listen to some of those UFO records and you'd be like, oh, listen to that like little knock on the wood that Eddie did that like 10 years later. Stuff like that.
Well, you know, I haven't heard the comparison of Eddie Van Halen to Michael Schenker. To me, they sound completely different. Now, I would say that I personally thought that Eddie Van Halen was a little bit closer to Uli John Roth.
Oh.
You know, Ulrich Roth was the original guitarist in the Scorpions. And the reason I say that is because Uli played the whammy bar. I mean, the cello bar. Uli was doing stuff with the whammy bar. If you listen to He's a Woman, She's a Man and Dark Lady and Sales of Sharon and those old
Scorpions. Right.
Those old Scorpion songs, Uli was going nuts with that tremolo bar on a Strat, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and somehow keeping it in tune at the same time.
I know, man. I know. He's amazing. I love Shanker. I love Eddie Van Halen. I love Randy Rhoads. I love all the guitarists from that era that were pioneering a new direction. They're all huge influences on me as an 80s guy. And, you know, I was obviously influenced by the late 70s of hard rock music.
Right. Talking about that, Brian, I interviewed him maybe a couple of years ago, and he said he wishes that there wasn't so much reverb on your records. Are you in the same boat? Do you think they sound maybe too much like the 80s and their era?
No, Brian and I have totally different views and tastes when it comes to production and stuff, you know, and I love Brian. Don't get me wrong. This is not, we're just different. He and I are very different. I would not want to touch our old records and remix them or anything like that. To me, they captured us at a time. The sound of our first album, which is what he might be talking about, a lot of that is what's called room ambience, because we recorded that first album in Bearsville Studio. The room was the size of a gymnasium.
Oh, jeez. So no baffling, nothing, just...
Yeah, it was a totally live ambient room. It was a period of time that I would not want to remix it or change it myself personally. Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of the big cannonball snare drum though, and I'm a fan of the overprocessed guitar tones. Like the 80s, my favorite.
We still kept it raw. I don't think we were half as slick as what was going on in the 80s. We were more of an organic band. Our guitar sounds were more just not as dirty. But I know what Brian's talking about. He's talking about on the lead vocals, they did put some slap back and stuff like that on his voice.
Right.
And our second album, The Great Radio Controversy, you know, we were really trying hard at that point and overdubbing a lot of guitar tracks. And I'm guilty of that. I did. I have to say, if you read the credits, it says guitars, more guitars. That's because I went crazy overdubbing and double tracking.
Let me ask you, why were you going for that sound? Is it a product of the time? Was it because of Mutt Lang and Def Leppard, like trying to get those stacks and layers? Like where did that come from?
Well, you know, I was young, man. You know, we were a young band. And when you have an album that you've recorded, like Mechanical Resonance, which is our first album, you know, when you get a second chance on your next album, man, you're just trying harder. You're just really going for it as much as you can. And they call it the sophomore jinx or the sophomore syndrome, where, you know, it's your second album and you're really trying even harder than you did on your first one. And right. So that's where that came from.
But were you guys chasing a sound? Like, did you have an A&R guy behind your, like, over your shoulder saying, like, you know, you need to sound like this. Like, everybody has to sound like this right now. Like, was that kind of like the scene at the time?
Not really. I don't think our A&R guy or our management were really trying to make us sound like other bands. Mm-hmm. They were really encouraging us to try to write the best songs that we could for us. And they put a lot of expectations on our songwriting and wouldn't let us just settle for the demo tapes that we made. So they did put pressure on us, but I will give them credit to the point that they weren't trying to put pressure on us to sound like anybody else. No.
Right. You can check out the new video for SOS Too Bad, by the way, from Full Throttle Live. Tesla came out back in May. Fantastic sounding live record. Like, did you guys go in and like touch that up at all? Or is that like raw, like off the floor?
It is completely raw. And I want to give Brian Wheat credit for mixing that raw on the computer. You know, it's hard to make a computer recording sound raw, and he did a great job on that. I was more of the direction of the concept of it. I knew in my head that Full Throttle Live was going to be a great gig because we recorded it at that bike festival, Full Throttle.
In Sturgis, yeah.
In Sturgis. And I personally remembered that was a good one. So I asked him and our monitor engineer to dig through the archives and pull up that show, which makes up 90% of the album. And maybe one of the other songs came from one other show somewhere. I don't know, Chicago or something. But Brian and myself worked on that record and mixed it together. He did most of it at his studio on his computer. Then he brought it to my place and we finished it in my garage in California. And that's when we made the SOS Too Bad video. And we recorded SOS Live because we wanted to put a bonus track on there.
Right.
And, you know, Aerosmith Live Bootleg is one of our favorite live albums of all time. And so that's why we picked that song as a tribute.
Nice. That's a good homage right there.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
I love that. You can check that out now wherever you get your music, by the way. It's fantastic. By the way, so just real quick, last time you were in Montreal, you hooked up with Frank Marino at his house. Talk to me about that. I mean, I can't even imagine being at 5150 or at Eddie Van Halen's house hanging out. And like, I got the sense from talking to Mitch, like, because you guys are pals, like that you kind of had that feeling like, oh, my God, like I'm hanging out with Frank Marino. Like, what is it about Frank that you just love?
Well, first of all, after meeting him, I was blown away at what a nice guy and what a cool, down to earth, friendly, talkative guy he is. And most guitar players from my generation, Zach Wilde, myself, you know, Alex Skolnick, anybody will tell you, Vinnie Moore, any guitar player from my era will tell you that Frank Marino and Mahogany Rush, that live album that he put out in 1978 is freaking some of the greatest guitar playing of all time. And, you know, again, live albums, we were talking about Tesla's live album we just did.
Yep.
Live albums in general have always been my favorite. And in 1978, when I was a 12-year-old kid, Frank Marino, Mahogany Rush Live, man, I wore that album out. I mean, you know, it's just spectacular. His world anthem and his talking about a feeling and Dragonfly and the stuff that he did, the answer, the opening of the album. So to get to hang out with him and get invited over his house for pizza was really a treat for me as a fan.
It's kind of cool to hear you talk about it like that, because it's like at the end of the day, we're all still fans, regardless if we're in the business or not. We're still fans.
Absolutely. I mean, we're in this business because we are fans. And Tesla and Brian Wheat and myself and Jeff Keith, I mean, you know, we're all huge fans and we have different tastes. You know, Brian loves the Beatles. I love the Stones. You know, we're different, but we all love music and we share that with each other. Backstage in the dressing rooms, we listen to music before we go on stage. And, you know, we're definitely fans of music and like you are. I mean, you know, that's what makes this fun.
Yeah. And I guess being in a band too, it's like taking all those influences and culminating them together. I mean, like that also influences the sound of the band as well.
Yeah. Yeah. The best bands always bring in different influences and elements with each guy in the band. I'm just trying to think of who I was just watching and reading an interview with someone. I think it might've been Styx. You know, they were talking about their different influences, and JY is a huge Hendrix fan, you know, and Tommy Shaw is a huge Beatles fan, and they put that together and that's what you get Styx, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's you put it all together, mix it up, and boom, you got the sound.
Yeah.
Do you bring a lot of that to the up and coming bands that you're working with? I mean, I've seen all the time, like between Red Voodoo and like a bunch of different guys, it's like do you kind of tell the boys like, yeah, you got to take everything that you love, put it together and create a sound, but also create your own thing out of it. You don't want to try and replicate somebody or something that somebody's already done.
Well, yeah. I mean, working with those bands that I was doing at that time at their level, you know, I didn't really tell them to be influenced by anybody. They had their own influences, you know, and they were still discovering themselves. Mm-hmm. Basically my job with them was to record them in the studio and have them learn to listen to what they were doing. And my job and passion with working with young artists was, again, like I had mentioned, songs are the most important. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to teach them how to take a jam and a rough idea that they're noodling around with and turn it into a cohesive song. And right. like with Red Voodoo, for example, we did a song called Rise Up. And that was just him strumming on the acoustic guitar, and we turned it into a song, and it did pretty well. Yeah. Same with their new song they've got. It's called Mystery Girl. They re-recorded it, but the basic core of the song is how I produced it and helped them write it. So they've learned that from me, and that's kind of what my goal was with them, is teaching them how to write songs.
Yeah. The song is key at the end of the day. You want to be able to grab an acoustic. It doesn't matter how much gated, you know, reverb is on that snare. If you can't sit around a campfire with an acoustic and sing along to the melody, like, what's the point?
Exactly.
Tesla's going to be hitting Vegas. Big Las Vegas residency kicking off next week, September 29th. Get tickets now at Ticketmaster.com, houseofblues.com/Las Vegas. And, of course, check out their latest live record and this awesome Aerosmith cover and just great stuff. Tesla's still going 40 years later. Do you expect to still be around and performing at the level you guys are at this point?
Man, I've never expected anything. I mean, I always knew that Tesla would keep going as long as we can and we plan to. I always knew, me personally, that I'll be playing until I'm 90 years old if I live that long.
Yeah.
Because it's what I love to do. It's like a fish. A fish has to swim in the water, and music is my water, and I'm the fish that swims in it. You know? So I'm going to continue to play, and hopefully Tesla will continue to keep on doing it. We plan to, for sure. And we're very grateful, man. I mean, there is so many great bands and so many great guitar players and singers that have come and gone and that are still out there. And so I feel very grateful that we are still doing what we do. And we have the fans, the loyal fans that still love our music. It's mind blowing. I never expected it, to answer your question. No.
I love it. Well, the band's still firing on all cylinders, man. I saw those three shows in that summer and it was amazing. So make sure you go and check out Tesla on the Road and pick up this latest live record and just go stream it, download it, do what you got to do to get in your life. It's great. Frank, it's so great to talk to you.
Hey, it's great to talk to you, Jeremy. And so, yeah, one more thing. Miles Away was the first single. There's a video for that. It's on YouTube and it's live and it's rocking. Really proud of it. SOS, we got a video for that. So, you know, search YouTube, everybody, and check it out.
Yeah, get all the views. Give them all the views. Make sure you like and smash that subscribe button so you get more Tesla content, too.
Yeah, yeah. And I may have a release that I may personally put out in December. And if I do, I'll get a hold of our publicist and have her call you. And maybe you would be so kind to check that out. I've got a tribute that I'm doing to an artist that just passed away. I don't want to say his name, but an artist that I'm really a fan of. And I'm going to do a little tribute to him. And that I'm going to try to get that out in December.
Awesome. Well, we'll have to look forward to that. That's great.
All right, man.
An all-new episode of The Jeremy White Show.
Available wherever you stream.
Catch up on past interviews and episodes on demand now.
Subscribe so you don't miss any of it.